As I mentioned, these bioactive compounds were typically feeding them for their health benefits. So another large source of these bioactive compounds are those that are plant-derived. Another general term we can use for those are phytoextracts. And so we can, these phenolic compounds is one of the kind of classes within these phytoextracts. And they typically are most known for their antioxidant or antioxidative capacity, but they can also have anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial properties as well. And they can, a lot of them exhibit even all three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Did you know that beta-carotene deficiency can affect fertility rates and reproductive performance? Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich provides beta-carotene to help your cattle fertility rates. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm your host for today, Gail Carpenter. I am joined by Haley Riesinger, currently a PhD student at Michigan State University with Dr. Barry Bradford. Haley is a recipient of the Foundation for Food and Agriculture Research Fellowship. After graduating from Penn State University with a bachelor's degree in biology, she began at Michigan State. At Penn State, she did gain an interest in dairy nutrition during her time in Dr. Kevin Harbatine's lab. So Haley has joined us today to chat a little bit about some of her PhD research and some of the things she's been working on. But before we get started into your research, Haley, Foundation for Food, Agriculture, and Research Fellowship. Everybody says, so it's the abbreviation is FFAR, and everybody says that abbreviation differently. I say FFAR. Is that, what do you say?
I just say FAR. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like that you need to like stutter on the F or FFAR. Yeah. So, yeah. It's easy to throw too many Fs in there. So what is this fellowship that you're on? What does that involve? What makes your fellowship, What makes it special?
So I absolutely love this fellowship. It's for PhD students in any agriculture field within the U.S. So my fellowship or my cohort is composed of 30 other PhD students. And basically, so our research has to be ag-related, but our fellowship is not focused on the research that we do, which is really unique, I think. So the fellowship is basically focused on building the graduate student up in more of like a professional development aspect. So we've learned so many things so far. It's a 3-year fellowship and I'm only like a year in. So I still have a ways to go, but we learn like interviewing techniques. We learn just communicating, like how to communicate our science, how to have different or difficult conversations with colleagues, just like really so many things. And it's wonderful. We all have industry mentors too, or they can be in academia. So it really also helps to expand your network as a grad student.
That's really cool. So you said there's 30 students in your cohort. Is that what you said? Or how many students are in your cohort?
There's 30 total students.
Okay. And so is that across all 3 years?
Each year they have an admittance, a new cohort being admitted. And I think this year they might have a little over 30, but actually myself and one other student are the only animal-related agriculture people in the whole fellowship. So we get to chat whenever we have our in-person meetings, which happen once a year. And then we do Zoom calls through the rest of the year. We just get to, it's really, really fun to see the other people doing like plant research, entomology research. It kind of gives you a new perspective on things.
Do you ever listen to people having those conversations and think, oh, I could have done something? Like, does it ever make you want to, like, try something different for a PhD or anything along those lines? Or are you like, no, I do not want to look at bugs. I just want to work with cows.
No, totally. In our last in-person meeting, we had a scientific communication workshop and we all did like a 10-minute presentation. And I was just thinking, man, after I finish this PhD, maybe I'll go like get a PhD in some like wheat science or something.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
Yeah. So I meet people every once in a while and I'm like, I had no idea you could even do a PhD in that. And it makes me want to go back to school sometimes, but I also don't miss being a PhD student too much, but you could do a postdoc in something random, right? Like,
yeah.
I have a friend who did he's a dairy geneticist, but he did a postdoc in like shrimp, right? Like you could, the sky's the limit with postdocs. So let's talk about your research then a little bit. You work quite a bit with bioactives, and that is such a broad term. So talk to me a little bit about what bioactives are, what nutraceuticals are. Are those the same thing? Are they two words we can use interchangeably? It's one of those, it's kind of like a buzzword, right? That makes everything sound immediately cooler. But what does it actually mean?
So bioactive compounds are basically compounds that exert biological effects. So we typically are interested in them because a lot of them have a positive health benefits. So that's mainly what my research focuses on, is feeding them for just improving the health of our animals. So these bioactive compounds, whenever they enter the body, they typically alter cellular or physiological processes or functions. So that's where we get those bioactive effects from. And there's so many different bioactive compounds out there, and probably many more to be discovered. So when I think of bioactives, I typically think of them coming from three main sources. One is plant derived. So these are typically secondary metabolites of the plant. And the plant actually uses those as a defense mechanism themselves. So like against pathogens. And so then we've discovered that we can use them. And this is nothing new. I mean, using plants kind of as for medicinal purposes has been happening for so long in humans specifically. And then the bioactive compounds that we typically get from plants are like phenolic compounds or like polyphenols, flavonoids, things like that. We can also get bioactive compounds from microbial products or microbes, so like vitamins or beta-glucans. Probiotics would even classify as bioactive compounds. And then also there's animal-derived sources, so like amino acids or something that I have studied quite a bit in my research is fish oil, so the omega-3 fatty acids that we can get from fish. So those are kind of a little bit on bioactive compounds. And then nutraceuticals, they're a little different, but a lot of these terms are sometimes, I think, used interchangeably, but they are a little different. Nutraceuticals are the kind of the formulated or the extracted product from maybe the plant or microbial source. So the term nutraceutical literally combines the term nutrient and pharmaceutical. So it's something that we feed to get these pharmaceutical properties. So they are products of the food source with these health benefits, and they contain bioactive compounds. And not to be confused also with functional foods. So functional foods are feeding, they have these bioactive compounds, and they, but functional foods, when we talk about those, that's actually feeding the whole food. So like, for example, we can feed dairy cows whole flaxseed or ground flaxseed, and we're not really doing anything to the flaxseed. So that would be like a functional food. But then if we extract the oil from the flaxseed to get flax oil, that would be more of a nutraceutical. and the bioactive compounds within both of those that we think is doing the most, having the most biological effect on the animal is the fatty acid, alpha-linolenic acid and omega-3 fatty acid in those.
Okay. So would you, by your definition, would you say bioactive compounds are within nutraceuticals? Like,
yes. Yeah.
I've just been using those terms kind of interchangeably. I will be a lot more careful in the future when I talk about these.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do. And it's pretty common, but there is like a slight difference, but very, very small.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
There's such a fine line when we're talking about bioactives or nutraceuticals, where there's really good scientific evidence for a lot of these, right? I think omega-3s is a great example, right? That like, oh, we have so much good scientific evidence that these have a positive benefit. And then there's a lot of things out there where it's like, that's just foo-foo dust, right? Do you, when you talk about your research with people, do you ever find that you have to convince them like, what I'm studying is actually like, it's actually scientifically valid and legitimate? Do you ever feel like you're fighting with those conversations?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the person, because some people are all for it and other people are very skeptical, which I understand, because there's a lot of studies that show positive outcomes, but then there's a lot of studies that didn't really like see anything. So I think a lot depends on like what's the animal going through, what age is the animal, because as many of us know, calves are very different than like the adult cow, and even like production stages. So there are a lot of factors that go into it. Whenever talking to those people that are very skeptical, I kind of just am honest with like the, you know, this is what I saw in my study. This is what my cows were going through, maybe like the health challenges that we were seeing. So yeah, it can be challenging sometimes, but I think especially for omega-3s, I think there's a lot of potential there with those.
And I think part of what makes some of those conversations difficult too is that as scientists, we have to be skeptical, right? That's part of our job. But I'm sure it can get exhausting for you too. So, yeah. let's talk about omega-3s then for a little bit. Have you been, this is an area of interest to you. Did Dr. Harvatine, is he the one who got you interested on the fatty acid side? Is that where you caught that bug?
I definitely gained a lot of knowledge and interest in fatty acids from Dr. Harvatine. And then when I came here to Michigan State with Dr. Bradford, it kind of just worked out that he had a project funded with the omega-3 fatty acids, specifically DHA. And I was like, this is great because I already know a little bit about fatty acids. So I started that project. It was an infusion study, an abomasal infusion. And I really delved into the immunology side of that and those, the effects that these fatty acids can have on the immune system. And then we applied that to a transition cow study just last year. So we actually fed a calcium salt of these omega-3 fatty acids in that study.
So are any results that you'd like to share with us on some of that research, or is that something we'll have to stay tuned for future conferences to learn more about?
Yeah, I could share a little bit now. I think all of this I've already presented at ADSA, so I have abstracts out there on all of those. But my first study, so it was an infusion, so I do have to acknowledge, like, we just completely bypassed the rumen, which a lot of things can happen.
Rumen. Yeah. Yeah.
But for that study, I did some ex vivo whole blood stimulations with Staph aureus and E. coli bacteria. And we saw some cool outcomes with neutrophil function. We infused 0, 2, 4, and 6 grams per day of DHA into the abomasum. And we saw some pretty significant increases in neutrophil phagocytosis, which is a method for neutrophils, which is an immune cell, that they engulf the bacteria, and it basically eliminates the bacteria from like doing any more harm to the body. So that was cool to see. For the transition cal study, we saw some various effects in cytokines in general, both anti-inflammatory cytokines. But then I think the most interesting thing that we saw in that study wasn't even really an immune outcome, but after the cows, when they entered their lactating period, I started taking ultrasounds of the uterus to measure uterine involution, which is an important process for the uterus to return back to normal size and health after calving. And I saw in the cows that we fed the calcium salt of omega-3 fatty acids that their uterus actually regressed quicker than the cows not receiving these omega-3 fatty acids. So that was kind of interesting. And maybe supports the idea that there's some uterine health benefits with these fatty acids, as quite a few studies have shown improved like pregnancy per artificial inseminations or reduced pregnancy losses during the breeding period when these omega-3 fatty acids are fed.
All right, let's take a big step back and talk a little bit more generally about bioactives, not to get too far into the weeds on. I know as a PhD student, you can talk about your research more than anybody, but let's take a step back and talk a little bit more broadly about bioactives again. So you're particularly interested in omega-3s, but what other, and you mentioned phenolics also briefly, what other bioactives are out there and why might they be beneficial to include in dairy cow diets?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, these bioactive compounds, we're typically feeding them for their health benefits. So another large source of these bioactive compounds are those that are plant derived. Another general term we can use for those are phytoextracts. And so these phenolic compounds is one of the kind of classes within these phytoextracts. And they typically are most known for their antioxidant or antioxidative capacity, but they can also have anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial properties as well. And they can, a lot of them exhibit even all three. So yeah, these bioactive compounds are largely known for their antioxidant, anti-inflammatory and or antimicrobial properties. And I think that also in general, not just with feeding these phytoextracts or phenolic compounds, but just feeding bioactive compounds in general is, I think, very interesting right now to support the health of the cow, to prevent disease from progressing or prevent establishment of an infection by supporting the immune system, which is really important, especially because of the pressure to reduce antibiotic usage on farms. So I think it kind of feeds into that effect as well. Another thing with these phenolic compounds is that a lot of them we can get from byproducts of like human food sources. So, for example, there's a lot of research out there on pomace. So, like, we can get that. That's basically the residual pulp and stuff from processing like grapes, or there's olive pomace. And more recently in Michigan, my research has started looking at tart cherries and actually the tart cherry pit. I think that's kind of unique, and we're able to use these byproducts to extract these compounds that have such a significant effect on these systems of the animal, and hopefully just keep them healthy.
So you talked a little bit at the beginning about like functional foods versus nutraceuticals versus bioactives. So with your tart cherries, are you feeding the pit, or are you working on extracting, or like what do you see this looking like when your research actually gets used out in the real world, right?
Yeah, so we've used an extract. We haven't fed the whole pits. So it started off with, we have a collaborator here at MSU, and they developed an extract, and we did some cell culture work on that just to make sure it wasn't toxic to the cells. I think that's, I have gotten that comment a lot. Well, aren't some of these extracts or the compounds within the extracts toxic? And to some level, yes. But if you're feeding, I think like a lot of things at high levels can be toxic. So you just have to use an appropriate dosage, right? And so we did some cell culture work. We confirmed these anti-inflammatory and antioxidant effects. And so, yeah, now we're looking at applying this to a cow study. And again, we're going to use the extract because the form that you feed it in can not only affect bioavailability, but it can greatly affect the phenolic abundance within the extract or the plant, and even the processing method to get to that extract. That can change the phenolic abundance and the types of phenols that actually go into that extract.
So when it comes to bioactives, what's the next frontier? What do you think we're going to be looking at 10, 20, 30 years down the road?
One thing that I always think about with these phenolic compounds is what are they doing in the rumen? Because we don't really know a lot about how. There's a little research out there, but we don't know which. There's so many types of phytoextracts. Like there's so many types of compounds within these phytoextracts that we don't know what each of them are doing in the rumen and how those microbes are changing them, or are they getting bypassed? So I think that's a huge area that is yet to be discovered. And once we have a better understanding of that, maybe we can use different compounds and phytoextracts to support like rumen health if they are staying in the rumen and affecting the rumen, or which ones are getting bypassed by the rumen and which phytoextracts or compounds is the small intestine uptaking and then used for systemic purposes.
No, that rumen is so, it's like a double-edged sword, right? Like it does so many amazing things, and it's what makes cows the great recyclers, right? But then it like screws up all of our experiments.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, so yeah, it detoxifies things too, right? So is it, you know, it can have a benefit with some of these toxic compounds or potentially toxic compounds. Maybe the rumen gives a little bit of a buffer there or helps detoxify or helps protect from that. But then it's like, well, how do you convince the rumen to let the good stuff through, but not the bad stuff, right? And I think that'll keep all of us in business for a long time.
Yeah.
All right. So what else do we need to talk about? Anything else that you think we missed in this discussion that you'd like to hit on, or any gaps that you'd like to address? Any other passion projects that you want to share with us?
I think I talked a lot about the effects on the immune system that these bioactive compounds can have. And I think that's where a lot of the interest lies. However, they can also, like I said earlier, when I was defining bioactive compounds, they alter physiological systems. So it's not just the immune system. With the omega-3 stuff that I was talking about, I hinted a little at supporting reproduction. So they can also have different bioactives can have effects on the reproductive system, and also metabolic processes, like some of these, including omega-3 fatty acids and some of the different phenolic compounds have been shown to improve insulin sensitivity. or there's some evidence for supporting liver health. So it's not just the immune system. They can affect so many other systems. And I just think there's a lot more potential to be discovered with them.
Very cool. Well, we'll stay tuned then and hope to hear more in the future about other work that you're doing in this area. So we can go ahead and move into our three questions that we ask all of our guests. But before we do, where can people find more about your research and what you're working on and stay up to date with what you're doing?
So I would say LinkedIn is probably the number one place where people can go. So my LinkedIn is just my name, Haley Riesinger. Yeah, I think that's probably where I'm most active in the scientific world.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Our Yeast 40 Ruminal and Intestinal Double Modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Bergen Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence.
All right, well, let's go in then, and we'll ask the three questions that all of our guests get asked. The first one is, what is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
This might be maybe a very grad student answer, but the Journal of Dairy Science.
That's a good one.
Yeah, constantly going to. Yeah, so I have their, like, I think it's weekly emails or whatever, just to see what new research is out there. So that's probably my number one for the dairy world.
And so the second one then is, what is your favorite non-dairy related book or resource? And I'm sure you've had, like, do you do book clubs or podcasts or anything like that with your fellowship? Or
yeah, honestly, my fellowship is a wonderful resource. And actually, this, I guess my answer might kind of be related to the fellowship. I would say the resource that I rely on the most is probably my mentor, my network of mentors that I have. So I have mentors both within the dairy industry and outside of the dairy industry, and even outside agriculture. And I just find it so helpful that especially people who, a lot of them have already been through grad school. So it just, like, hearing their experiences or getting their advice, I think is probably the most, it's very beneficial, at least for me to get through some things.
I think that's great advice in general. And, you know, you're lucky enough to have this, or skilled enough to have this fellowship, right? But anybody can build a network. Might just take a little bit of work. And I think that's a great answer, is that network of mentors. And I still have many people that I'll reach out to and get advice on. And I don't think that ever, my faculty mentor was talking to me about his mentor. And I think you never lose that. So I think that's the first time I've gotten that answer from anybody. And it's a good one. I like it. I approve. All right. And so the last question that we always ask is, what do you think sets successful dairy professionals apart from those that aren't successful?
This one, I'm kind of going to piggyback off of my last answer. And I think the ability to mentor someone effectively and successfully is really important. I'm looking back on so many of my mentors that are really good mentors. And I feel that they have, they haven't been a huge crutch for me, but they teach me things that, like, kind of push me to learn things myself. And I just feel like through that, I've grown so much, but yet they're also there when I'm struggling or, like, to help me out. So I would say the ability to just, like, know how to mentor someone really can go a long way. And I guess that's not dairy industry specific.
But it doesn't have to be, right? I think that's good, that's good regardless of the field that you're in. All right. Well, thank you again, Haley, for joining us today. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.